Welcome to Kibitz and Bits, where we argue information security and draw lessons from a weekly Torah portion.
A Torah portion is the biblical reading in the Jewish scriptures for a given week. So we are clear, we're not Torah experts.
Yeah, we're barely cybersecurity experts.
So we've been told. But we do have opinions, and we're going to share them with you.
This weekly podcast starts in 2019, or 5780, depending on your point of view. And you are listening to episode 7 for the week of December 1st. I'm Wolf, and I am an advisory CISO.
I'm Dave. I work in cybersecurity professionally, but you may know of my work with Hack for Kids.
Hey, so Dave, what's this week's Torah portion?
So in this week's Torah parshet, Vayetzi, pardon the pronunciation, Vayetzi, there we go, Genesis 28:10 through 30:13, we found an excerpt at 29:18, where after Jacob has already provided 7 years of service to his uncle Laban for the hand of Laban's daughter Rachel or Rachel, and Laban pulled a fast one on him, kind of swapped daughters. When his older daughter Leah was presented to Jacob rather than Rachel, it was like, wait a minute, he did these 7 years of service. He had, you know, an agreement. And at the end of the agreement, the terms changed, where there is a custom in that land where the oldest daughter must be married off first. I know you recently have been married, and there is a custom also to kind of prevent that deception from happening.
Yeah, I was married about a year ago, and so this would have been about 2 years ago now when I first heard this story. And my wife, my Jewish wife, she was telling me about the tradition of the bedekin, right? So the bedekin is a tradition where the groom veils the bride himself. So, and you know, in the Christian way, it's like, oh, we will not see the bride until the last moment. Not so much here. And she was telling me the story and saying, hey, this way, you know, it's like, you know what you're getting, right? You get to look underneath the veil first. You check out, make sure it really is who you think it is. You're satisfied. You veil the bride and away you go.
And again, mazel tov on your nuptials. It was a fantastic wedding. Thank you both for the invitation. But I would say with this, right, what are the lessons learned from this piece of scripture? There's even more to it that I didn't mention before, is really the law of the land or the customs there. The older daughter does get married off first, or did Laban just kind of make it up as he's going along? And at that moment, it became a custom because it was convenient for him, because then he would get 7 more years of service from Jacob with the condition that a week after their nuptials, Jacob and Leah's, then he can then marry Rachel and have 2 wives. So now we've got polygamy going on. We've got deception going on. But yet the integrity of all of this, none of it ever came into question.
Yeah, and I think that's the thread really to pull on in my way of thinking. You know, when we were looking at the Noah story, we kept coming back to availability as part of the CIA, right? The confidentiality, mm-hmm. integrity, availability. This here really is more of an integrity story. Do we have the right bride? Do we have the right custom? Have the right kids? There's a lot going on, and it really drives home for me that point that you need, in so many ways in cybersecurity, to check the integrity of what's coming into your house, right? As a CISO, that's what's coming into your organization. But you need to have that moment where you're doing some sort of check, you're lifting the veil, you're doing some sort of audit, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I know there's some really great real world examples of these. I'm still continuing to scratch my head. Like, you know, you've got these different types of, you know, just say lack of controls, lack of process. And I'm going to say, and I've been saying this throughout my entire career, security is a process. And when the process breaks down, what you're now introducing is uncontrolled, immeasurable risk.
Yeah, and security is a process, but it's not just your process, right? Security is the culmination of all the processes that go into enabling the technology that your organization is running on. And you mentioned some real world examples. One of them that was just in the news in October of 2019 was Quest. So Quest Diagnostic had a whole bunch of health information. Quest Diagnostic was sued in a class action lawsuit for having this health information be, you know, breached and attacked. It was something like 34,000 patients. And at the end of the day, it wasn't a process at Quest per se. I mean, we can argue if Quest should have done some, you know, better lifting of the veil and due diligence, but it was actually a problem of Quest's primary application, Care 360. So Care 360 has a breach. Their process is poor. Now that bubbles up to cause a lot of risk on Quest Diagnostics.
So this is a great example, very contemporary or like current event type example, something that we can all relate to and easy to kind of just get additional details from, say, you know, a quick search. But the process, right? I'm going to go back to the process and what that has to do with integrity. So historically, what I've seen, and, you know, from my professional experience, is when you have to implement a process, where's the checks and balances? And who is responsible for those checks and balances? The separation of duty and responsibility from custodial responsibility, from authoritative or authorization for access to certain assets or resources. And you know, we can compare this to anything, whether you're writing code, whether you're implementing physical security, whether you're implementing network security. A part of that process at every stage, and I'm going to kind of touch back on something that's, I know, very near and dear to you, is the trust, or not having trust, or the term currently being used is zero trust. Now, with that in mind, do you see this relationship of zero trust to these biblical tales?
Yeah, I think it's a concept of excessive trust and the trust not being verified. Right. So zero trust is all about minimizing excessive trust in the system, just like least privilege is all about minimizing excessive privilege. And so in this situation, you know, there's some trust there. There's some trust that the woman I'm marrying is really the woman I think I'm marrying. And obviously there was no confirmation of that. There was no double check.
Great, great point. Now, the double check would be part of the process. So we're kind of like supporting each other's side of the argument. But in that particular case of lifting the veil, there's really low effort. It's something that anyone can do pretty much. And that effort would quickly mitigate the risk. So I guess the question or the argument might be between us is how much effort is required to minimize or mitigate the risk, and is it worth just something that's simple like lifting a veil? But when it comes to the children, right, there was some children with handmaidens instead of spouses. And now, you know, what would you do today? We would do a DNA test. How much effort's there? Not that much. But back then, what would they do? Hold the baby up and say, oh, the ears, you know, match the handmaiden ears. This is not her child, right? And this happened on both sides. It wasn't just one side. So to me, I'm going to argue no matter what the whatever you're trying to validate the integrity on, the process is priority, and whatever the effort is that you have to make, that is tantamount to anything else.
Well, so I was involved. I led a project for a bank. And the bank had to go out and verify something like 200 of its vendors. And so we were doing vendor risk assessments, effectively lifting the veil on all these vendors to recertify their ability to operate within the bank's technology ecosystem. And that ended up being a multi-year effort. And so let's assume, you know, vendor 199 is the at-risk vendor. And you're starting from vendor one. That may mean you have like up to 2 years in the environment before we get to vendor 199 and make sure they're in a secure state. I think lifting the veil during nuptials is pretty quick. Actually confirming that the vendors you're using are following secure processes, that can be time consuming, man. It can be a lot of work.
And yes, it is. But is it worthwhile effort? And the effort obviously is going to be measured in dollars and cents. And you can even say, you know, whether it's common sense or not. I would argue that it is, that if you need to get to that vendor, you know, 199, and it takes you 2 years, then either your process is overbearing and overburdensome and even probably too costly, and it might need to be refined without giving up too much of that trust, without giving, without adding additional risk. And you've got to decide how much, again, you know, the term risk appetite, but getting to that vendor 199 in 2 years, to me, is unacceptable. We have automation for a reason. We have APIs. We have very sophisticated developers. So something in that process could have been automated. Now, would it have taken 2 years to write the code? Maybe. But if you can get to 199 and it takes 2 years, but to get to 1,000, you could do in the same 2 years, you've now improved your security posture and your productivity at the same time. That's my argument.
So there's two things at play, I believe. One is the audit process itself on new vendors and on maintaining ongoing vendors. And the second is the continual assessment of the performance of that vendor. So when you think about zero trust, one of the principles of zero trust is continuously reassessing trust, right? In terms of the initial assessment, I think you're right. I think today we don't necessarily have a good way to do that assessment. Every organization has a different way of doing it. Banks are falling under SEC guidelines. Insurance companies, others are falling under IDFS. You know, everyone else is coming up oftentimes with their own third-party audits. So we do absolutely have a need to squeeze down the amount of time we spend on these things. In the example I gave, we couldn't necessarily do that because it was a brand new assessment mandated by the SEC. But I recently spent a lot of time with a third-party audit clearinghouse. So they do all the third-party audits and chase down all the audit information, make sure people fill it out, all that sort of stuff. And all you do is you subscribe to that. So I audit Care 360 because I'm Quest, and the next hospital down the road is also using Care 360. They don't need to re-audit. They just need to pull down that information from the clearinghouse. So I think there are absolutely ways as we mature this process, right, that we can hopefully get to lift the veil speed on audits. I just don't know that we're necessarily there yet.
So I feel like you're telling me that I'm right.
Well, hold on. I just said there's two parts of it, right? Part one is the assessment of the vendor. And today I think it's too hard. So today I don't think we can assess everyone. But part two is continuous assessment. You know, one of the things that I think about is there's this chat app, right? There's this chat app that was hacked recently. And this chat app was used by Delta Airlines. It was used by Best Buy. It was used by a whole bunch of different orgs. And when the criminals broke that chat app, they inserted JavaScript in that was effectively a keylogger. And this went on for quite a while. That's not something you would catch in a vendor risk. It's only something you're going to catch if you're regularly and consistently assessing trust, right? That you're not just like, oh, on the veil, I lifted it up and made sure she really was her. Okay, we're good. That on a very regular basis, you make sure that the wife you bring into your house, the service you bring into your company, is still behaving in a trustworthy, secure way.
That is a really good side to your other part of your argument. The only other thing that I was thinking, and I don't even know if it's that strong. For example, with the code with the chat app, right? And they did some JavaScript injection. my lack of knowledge of that specific incident and how all those other pieces work together, I don't know where that keylogger code sat, right? Did it sit kind of in RAM already because they were able to bypass any other kind of controls? So, because what I was thinking as you were describing that, well, don't we sign code? Shouldn't the signature be validated? Isn't that kind of a part of integrity as well before it's actually executed? But I'm just going to assume, and again, my lack of knowledge of that specific case, is that they injected it in an area which has, you know, kind of supplanted all the controls.
Yeah, and I think what that gets to is, you know, code signing that you bring up, verifying that the code is still in a secure way, running, you know, code scanners and those types of things. There's a million and one different technologies that can be used to make sure that you delivered what you said you delivered, no more, no less. And, oh, by the way, nothing is sneaking in and violating the overall security of, you know, my Delta Airlines credit card processing application. The problem is, and this is my fundamental concern with everything we're talking about here with integrity, is there's so many different things you can do. I would love to do it all, but I really think we need to take a risk-based approach. We're only doing, you know, maybe your top vendors, maybe your top controls, maybe your top checks.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. This is a tough one. If, you know, all the listeners out there, if you've got an opinion on this, you know, leave us a voice message. Tell us who you think is right, because I know I'm right, and I believe Wolf also believes he's right. But I totally respect his side of the argument.
Yeah, and to me, I'm just thinking it's all about priority. It's all about spending the limited time and resources you have in ways that makes sense. So definitely do leave us a message, and, you know, stick around and listen to our sponsorship message after the music. And hey, thanks for listening to Kibitz and Bits with Dave and Wolf.